Hello, CQ. Hello, CQ. This is 2-Emma Talk. 2-Emma Talk. This is 2-Emma Talk calling. Is that all right, Ash? Kirk, is it all right? You sure? You sure? What? I'm blasting. Hello, CQ. I'm blasting. Do you want to blast? I blast a whole lot. But, how are you tonight? I'm afraid there's a bit of rather serious things that have happened this evening. We did expect to get some rather famous singer, but, she failed. Singers fail, you know. They do. And we've got tonight a number of gramophone records, as usual. Well, anyway, I think we'll be getting ready to begin now. And the first thing I've got to introduce is a record entitled... By the way, why are all records entitled? Aren't they called something? A record entitled, Because God Made Thee Mine.
If you've got a wireless set as an amateur which had never done more than go pa 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 pa, and then suddenly you heard a voice or even music, I mean, it was fascinating. In this country, of course, you know, we carry red flags in front of the microphone. He carried them in front of the motor car, and the Postmaster General, on whom be everlasting peace, realized that we couldn't have such a thing as this without committee judgment and serious consideration. But somehow or another, there was an idea among the amateurs. Who are amateurs? They're called hams. They're the people who wound coils and drilled ebonite and did all the happy things that you do with valves and wireless sets. And they petitioned the then Postmaster General that they might have a station so that they could have a constant source against which to calibrate their receivers. And the result of this petition was very naturally it was turned down. But under the influence of shock tactics, the preparation of another petition, eventually it was decided that there should be a station for these amateurs. I happened to be in the Marconi Company at the time, and we inhabited a place called Rittle, a hut, long, low hut, full of long, low people. And we had a wireless transmitter, and we were eventually appointed by the Radio Society of Great Britain to do this thing called broadcasting. We had to talk into this thing and give them signals. It was very formal, mark you. There was a license that we were given. The license said that the power had to be limited to 1 kilowatt, was it? And that had to include the power that was necessary for illuminating the or heating the filaments of the valve. But it took 2 kilowatts to do that already. However, we still owe the Postmaster General a number of kilowatts. But we went ahead, nevertheless. And that's how probably the first regular broadcasting station in Britain ever started. There was one before it. I'm a little jealous about the one that preceded it. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm talking about regular broadcasting. And gee, boy, were we regular. We were half an hour a week. Half an hour a week, every Tuesday. And we just broadcast, that's all. At first of all, it was terribly formal. The man picked up the microphone and said, "Hello, CQ, this is 2-Emma Talk Rittle calling. And we will now play you a gramophone record entitled." The curious thing with a gramophone record is always entitled. They're not called anything. And we just put on the gramophone record, and then it was switched off. And then we had to wait 3 minutes to listen out to find if we were interfering with legitimate services. Well, we were illegitimate, obviously, in those days. And, we listened out, and we weren't interfering, and we went on. And then one day, I never took part in these programs originally, but one day, it seemed to me to be rather fun to pick up the microphone. We went to the local and we had some dinner. And I started to broadcast. And we didn't wait 3 minutes. And we went on and we talked, and at least I talked, and we sang and we played the fool and so on. And I think that was the first broadcasting ever in Britain. Mark you, we weren't simply and only interested in broadcasting this frivolous stuff that you might think that we did. We had serious artists. For instance, we had Melchior. Melchior came to sing. I shall never forget Melchior coming. He brought an extraordinarily pretty accompanist. And with an air of intense originality, every member of the staff took this accompanist by the hand to show her our goat. We had a goat in the field next door, which was earthed. It had a peg in the ground and a chain attached to it, and it circulated around this thing. But in the end, of course, the accompanist had to do her job, and she played the opening bars, and one held the microphone in front of the singer's face at a suitable distance that one judged to be about right. Well, Melchior had just been married, apparently, and he'd left his wife comforted by a crystal set in Denmark, and he believed that the louder he sang, the more likely his wife, his new wife, was to hear him. And so when the opening bars were played, he gave a bellow which shut the station. Well, he sucked in his breath which pulled the windows shut, and he gave a bellow that shut the station down. And I remember afterwards he used to wander about the place and say, what's that bust component there? Oh, well, of course, that's part of the Melchior breakdown. That is, yes, I got that thing burst into flame. Well, there was another case, I remember, an amusing incident in which some woman came to sing, and she was all earnest, perhaps, and she sang Irusky lullabies. I told them not to make too Irusky, because remembering our audience, and she sang. Well, of course, I did a lot of imitations at the time. I pretended that we were receiving programs from Italy, and I did an Italian tenor interrupted by Morse and oscillation and so on, and I did other imitations of basses and oh, heaven knows how many. And, well, this woman sang, and they expected to get a lot of appreciative postcards. Unfortunately, they all turned up and said, now, that's the best imitation you've ever done. You know, with Rittle, we didn't have any elaborate studio or any wonderful gadgets and things like that. What we had was, when we wanted to play a gramophone record, we had a perfectly good mechanical gramophone with open doors. And you opened the doors, and you put the needle on, and it scratched, and it played little music. And then you held the microphone in front of the open doors where the sound poured out from. Sorry about the preposition at the end of the sentence, but that's how it was. And if you wanted it louder, you just moved the microphone nearer. And if you wanted it softer, you moved the microphone further away. We were able to keep one of the smoothest volumes controlled that has ever been invented. Of course, today, I mean, there are sliding resistor wires and wonderful faders and this and that, but pioneers are always no best.